Good afternoon. My name is Molly Marin. I am the webinar coordinator for the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. Just a few reminders before we get started today. All upcoming professional development offerings are listed on our webpage at nysrti.org, including two more webinars in today's webinar strand. A copy of today's PowerPoint, as well as an assessment audit, are available on our webpage. If you go under webinars and then today's webinar title, you will find that. During today's presentation, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. And at the end of today's presentation, we'll post a link to a brief evaluation. If you could please take a few minutes to complete that, we appreciate the feedback. We are very pleased to have Dr. Catherine Stahl with us today to present our Strand 13 series, using an assessment audit to create a lean and efficient RTI assessment system for grades K through 3. Today's topic is K through 3, General Introduction to the Assessment Audit Process, Forms and Foundations. Dr. Catherine Stahl is a Clinical Associate Professor of Literacy at New York University. She studies the effective instruction of reading in the elementary years. She is committed to improving student achievement and school effectiveness, especially in urban settings. She is currently the director of the NYU Literacy Clinic. For over 25 years, Stahl taught in high-poverty public elementary and middle school classrooms. The questions that she researches stem from those experiences and from current classroom observations. Her research examines reading acquisition and reading comprehension. Dr. Stahl has written 5 books related to literacy instruction. She earned her Ed.D. in reading education from the University of Georgia in 2003. And at this time, it's my great pleasure to welcome back Dr. Stahl.
Thank you, Molly. Welcome, everyone. I am very glad that you are joining us this afternoon to talk about the assessment audit process. I think it is a great way to take a look at what assessments your school or you are currently using in your grade level or classroom, and to determine and to really update them and to really determine what seems to make the most sense in 2016. So, as Molly said, we will be doing, we'll be talking about the purpose of undergoing an assessment audit, what needs to be included in the audit, and we'll talk about the actual constructs and functions of tests for consideration in the audit, and then also talk about ways to include people in your district or school and what role people in the, you know, that will be participating, what role they can play in contributing to the audit process. I hope that you already have the handouts or have that were presented earlier and that are available on the website, as well as a copy of the audit form, or at least the first two pages of that audit. You don't really need all of the pages. So we'll go on. So Molly was able to tell you a little bit about who I am, but as I'm sitting here doing this webinar, it always feels like a dark hole out there. So I would like you to tell me a little bit about who you are and what role you perform in your school and district. Okay, so it looks like we have a really nice variety of people in who are performing different roles in their schools and districts. So I think that this will really be a worthwhile presentation, and that, you know, this will be able to be disseminated, and you'll be able to carry this out in your school or district with a variety of perspectives. Okay, so Molly, can we go to the next slide? I think that was, everybody was able to be included in that. Okay, and so then also, if you are, can tell me a little bit, in addition to the role, what grades do you work with? I know some of you who are performing at the district level may be working with all grade levels, but those of you who might be working in schools as classroom teachers or interventionists or special ed teachers may just be working with a particular grade level. Okay, and you'll notice that you'll notice that we have two different strands that will be offered. We have strand 13, which is focused on kindergarten through third grade. Next week in particular, we'll really be focusing on specific tests that are geared to pre-K, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, and typically not so much third grade. But I know that in many schools, lots of urban schools, many of the children who are in third grade and in those classrooms, we're really looking at the need to utilize tests that might more typically be done in the lower grades. And so that's why you see grade 3 being included in both the primary grade presentations and the intermediate strand presentation. Okay, Molly, we'll go to the next slide. And I think, you know, I don't need to say any much more about who I am. I think Molly gave a beautiful introduction. I just hope I can live up to that wonderful introduction that she gave. But I do, like, you know, many of you, I have worn many hats over the years. That brings, you know, from my perspective, you know, having worked in schools, some of the things that I experienced, and, you know, I'll use this to go into the next slide. Oh, many of the resources that we are going to be talking about are available on the RTI Technical Assistance Center website, and I really encourage you to explore that website. There are so many resources. Many other webinars that have been done in the past continue to be available to you, and so there are many resources on that website. In addition to all the forms that we'll be talking about, many of the forms that pilot schools used, not only for the assessment audit process, but also in terms of looking at your interventions, looking at some of your tiered instruction and your data management. There are some wonderful forms on that website. There's no need, to reinvent the wheel. And also, this book, Reading Assessment in an RTI Framework, is one of my books that I actually wrote to, you know, as a result of working with schools in the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center as a member of that consortium. And so this really actually walks you through step by step, not only the audit process, but also refining your RTI structure within your school and with details at each tier of how to undergo an assessment process and, enabling it to be a very efficient structure and process. And so this is a good resource to refer back to for more detailed information on much of what we'll be talking about today. All right, so the assessment audit. One of the things that I think is really, an important reason to do an assessment audit is because so often, and I think we can all relate to this, that in the recent years, policies have changed, the Common Core standards have been introduced, and often what happens is that we continue to have assessments added on, and we just keep adding assessments on without really getting rid of some of the older assessments that may no longer serve us. And so we really periodically need to do a kind of assessment housekeeping. And so the assessment audit does serve as a way of taking stock and doing a house cleaning so that you will, as a result of this process, be keeping what works for you, getting rid of some things that are no longer serving their purpose, improving some of what you and your team members feel is worthwhile but may need to be refined, improved, tweaked somewhat. And then you'll also have a chance to discover what are the voids? You know, maybe we're doing some duplicates of assessment in some areas, but something like vocabulary, we haven't really systematized our instruction, and this is a void in which we are not identifying our children's strengths, weaknesses, and whether our children are growing in particular areas or not. The other thing, the other purpose that the assessment audit fulfills is making sure that as new faculty come on board, that all of those new faculty are aware of what your district or school values and what you are using, and also ensuring that as new people come on board, that training is taking place for those new people, and also ensuring that fidelity, that all, which is our next question, how are you avoiding what Maury Clay used to like to call drift, that how are we ensuring that that initial training that we might have done several years ago for this particular assessment that is a valuable assessment, how are we ensuring that we are continuing to administer it with fidelity in the way that it was intended to be administered, scoring it in the way that it was intended to be scored, and interpreting the results in the way that they were intended to be interpreted. And then being able to, and this is the big one that I find that most schools and most teachers have the, that they find the most challenging, is how do we use these notebooks and notebooks and spreadsheet and spreadsheets of data, how do we actually use them to inform instruction? That often is some of the most challenging, you know, and one of the most frustrating things about even having an assessment system that we all value and buy into. And finally, we do want to make sure that even our informal assessments, those formative assessments that we're using to inform instruction, that teachers are using day to day and are finding very valuable in terms of daily or monthly student growth, are those tests that we're using aligned to our Common Core standards? Or are they aligned with something that is no longer serving us? So hopefully by undertaking the audit, by undertaking this process, that you will hopefully be able to streamline and systematize the assessment process in your classroom, school, or district. And doing this in a process is extremely valuable, all right? For one thing, the, one of the most valuable aspects of it is the communication, because teachers behind closed doors continue to use assessments that are worthwhile to them and that provide the kinds of information that they value and that they feel is useful in informing and planning instruction. And so therefore, it's important to give teachers a voice to, and to find out, to explore who is doing what, but also not only what are they assessing and what are they using to assess it, but how are they managing the data? Because it's possible that on the same grade level, you might have two teachers using the same assessment, but using the assessment and managing the data in different ways. You might have one teacher has the information in folders, in 10 different folders, or in little bits of paper all over the classroom, whereas another teacher on that same team who might be very good with technology has it on a very beautiful, color-coded, streamlined spreadsheet that is very easy to read. And these are two teachers on the same team. And so by creating the opportunity to have this discussion, it creates the opportunity to learn from each other, because your greatest resources are the teachers within a school building. The other thing is different teachers are doing different assessments and may have different backgrounds. So for example, we might have, you know, teachers that have gone through different teacher training programs or have been at have other histories at different schools or other systems that are bringing assessments that might be very useful that other teachers might find valuable and want to use. And the other thing, though, is it really speaks to the value system. And so rather than having a very top-down model that is saying we're going to use this assessment and this assessment and this assessment, It is very valuable, and you will be likely to increase the investment in teachers themselves in assessments that are jointly decided upon and jointly discussed. And sometimes these discussions, I've been a part of two different districts that have undergone the assessment audit process. And what really was very beautiful about the process is having a venue to communicate values really helped teachers evolve in their own vision of what assessments were valuable, and to give them the, it often enabled them to change their minds about some of the things that they had been using previously, and to open minds about some new directions in assessment. It also provides the opportunity to evaluate, is what we're doing. We are spending, folks, you all know how much time we are spending on assessing, on assessments. And so we need to make sure that the assessments that we are administering are valid. Do they possess construct validity? Are they measuring what it is we value? And also, are they reliable? If we're undertaking an assessment and spending days administering an assessment three times a year, we want to know that that assessment is aligned with our Common Core standards, and that the likelihood is that it will provide some indicator to us of how children will be performing on other high stakes tests. And we also want to ensure that there's teacher-to-teacher reliability, is that we want to ensure that when the teacher in classroom number one is administering a test to a child, that the teacher in classroom number two is using the same criteria of evaluation and is administering the test in similar ways. So often when I go into schools, I hear teachers receiving test results from other classrooms and saying, well, this really isn't the picture that I'm seeing of this child. And so we really want to make sure that assessments that we buy into, assessments that we value, are being given according to the directions and the intended ways that they are to be administered. And finally, the last two bullets is, how can we get the information we need? The value of the assessment is we need to get information about what children know about literacy, what are their strengths, where is the process falling apart, and then what do we need to do about it, and how can we help? And so we want to do this in an efficient way that is not compromising instructional time. And so we want to make sure that the assessment is there to serve us, that we are not the servant to testing in ways that compromise instructional time and quality of instructions. So in undertaking the process, in undertaking an assessment audit, there are some decisions that you need to make. And the first decision that you all need to make, other than whether you want to do this or not, is the unit of what level of analysis do you currently plan to use. So, for example, I see that about 30 people are signed up and are participating in our audit. And so you need to be thinking about, is this something I'm interested in? Have I signed up to this audit webinar as an individual, as a teacher who wants to always be improving my practice? And so at that level, you might be, as an individual, doing an assessment audit individually. It may not influence anyone else in your grade level, but you are doing it because you want to improve your own practice and streamline in any way that you can within the bounds of your district, improve that assessment, make it a little leaner, what I like to call lean and mean. And so how can I perhaps double dip with some of these assessments that I'm using? So an individual classroom, you might be doing it individually. grade level. You might be doing it. Maybe different members of a grade level would like to look at the assessments they are using at a particular grade level, and every member of that grade level would be participating. And however, it may be only your grade level. Other teams in the within your school may not be interested in undertaking this process. But as a grade level, you want to undertake it together collaboratively as a grade level team. The third level of analysis, and probably our most popular, is the school-wide analysis. And this is where a school who might be undergoing a revision or renewal of their RTI framework is looking at the current assessments and, you know, might be deciding, gee, over the last couple of years between RTI and the Common Core and APPR, that we have just gone crazy with assessments, and it's time to streamline. We have got to get rid. We can't just keep adding more and more. And so a school-wide assessment would then take information from the individuals and from the grade level and use that information to come up with a lean and efficient school-wide assessment system and participate as a school-wide team with particular members from each grade level and each special faculty group to renew their school-wide assessment structure, their school-wide assessment system. And as I mentioned to you earlier, I also worked with two school districts who actually did this audit at the district level. And they had, of course, that built on schools in their district undertaking the school-wide process, and then they fed that information that they gathered from the school-wide process. That was fed into a district team who then undertook to develop a district-wide district-wide assessment system based on the outcomes and findings of the audit process. So what I would like you to do now is I would like you to report what you currently, you may change your mind after today, but currently, how do you think you will be using this audit process as an individual, as a grade level, as a school team, or as a district? And I think I'm still missing about 18. Well, I've got about 18 people, so I'm still missing a few. And as I said, you may change your mind later. But as of right now, how are you planning? Okay. So it's good. This is a very nice mix. And okay, Molly, I think that we've got that. And that information is also helpful to me as we plan our future. You know, as I continue to discuss all of this information, thank you so much for providing this information to me, because it does help me in ensuring that I'm meeting your needs at each of these levels. Okay, so next we're going to be talking about what needs to be included in the audit process. And I think that what we really want to do, you know, if you are one of the people that is spearheading this process, that it's important for the audit to be a comprehensive inventory of what is currently being used by teachers to gauge literacy performance or literacy growth. And it's important for the message to be sent out that this is non-judgmental. We really are looking for it to be as inclusive as possible. We want every teacher to pull out those pieces of paper and scraps of paper and things that they are using behind closed doors. And to feel comfortable sharing what they're using and the expression of why they're using it. Because this is what will help you be able to go on and will help the people who are participating become invested in whatever final decisions are made democratically. And so, you know, as I said, you know, you want it to be fairly judgmental and know that this is really a stock taking. We're taking stock of what's currently being used, and then later in the process, we will decide how we want to proceed. So first of all, let's take a look at the functions of assessment. And so one of the questions that you are asked on your form is to identify how you are actually using assessment. And so if we think about how we use assessment, we use them for a couple to do some jobs. The first job that we would be likely to use assessments for is for screening. All right, and so screening tests are given at the beginning of the year to quickly identify children who may need additional help, and then they are also given probably as benchmarks 2 or 3 additional times throughout the year. And so those would be considered screening, but they are given to get some overall information and fairly quickly. The next type of assessment is a diagnostic assessment, and I will be later giving some specific examples of these. Right now, I'm simply defining them for you, but there will be some examples of tests that are familiar to you and to your teams in just a moment. The next kind of test that we use, that's the next kind of function for a test that we require, is diagnostic tests. So those screening tests that we talk about that are probably given 3 times a year typically are able to tell us whether children are meeting grade level goals or some kind of benchmark, whether they're functioning above grade level or whether they are missing the mark and functioning either approaching grade level or well below level. However, they really don't provide much detailed information about the content of detailed targeted instruction. They are large grain, or they may be summative assessments. And so to really follow up on that screening to inform instruction, we need diagnostic tests, because the diagnostic tests are what inform instruction. We also need progress monitoring. I always believe that we need to be faithful. Certainly, we need to have fidelity to the administration of assessments and those procedures for administering assessments. But in terms, when we begin talking about interventions, our faithfulness is to our children's progress. And so progress monitoring is valuable because we don't want to wait 3 months or 4 months or halfway through the year to determine whether or not our research validated or research based intervention program or procedures are working. And so we need a very special kind of short, sensitive assessment given intermittently throughout the year at short intervals to make sure that children are developing at an adequate rate and that what we are doing instructionally is making a difference in learning. And finally, we need to be able to evaluate our programs and our school and our district. So we often our screening tasks will serve us both as screening and will serve us as evaluation and outcome measures. So these would typically be given at the end of the year to evaluate overall performance of a school, teacher, or grade level cohort. And again, something that's very diagnostic and detailed or some kind of sensitive progress monitoring tool would not be able to serve this function, but usually the same task that we use for screening measures also enable us to look at the outcomes of our school-wide performance or district-wide performance to make kinds of evaluative observations. So let me give you some examples of different kinds of measures that and assessments that you might already be using that are likely to be considered screening measures. So some common measures that are used for screening, and again, just like I ask you to be non-judgmental about what your teachers are using behind closed doors, I, at this point, I'm not going to make any kind of judgments about any of the assessments that I am going to be sharing with you. I will simply be telling you and helping you to identify what category they might be likely to fall into and how you might already be using these assessments. So some common measures that people used for screening to determine which kids are on grade level or above, which kids are approaching grade level, and which kids are far below level and may be at risk for reading difficulties. So we have our CBM measures are commonly used by several schools, such as, for example, Dibbles and Ames-Webb. Another some newer tests that are also commonly used are some in the category of adaptive tests that have become very popular in the last couple years, such as FastBridge. These are tests, remember, that adjust to children's difficulties and their ability to answer certain questions, and then the computer-based tests adjust to make the items and passages either more difficult or easier, dependent upon what the child has done on the first, with each item. And so they have become very popular, and they are used as screening. FastBridge, STAR, iReady, NWEA. Then we have the people also who might use a benchmark kit of some kind. For example, your F&P kit. Some people may use that as a screener to determine whether children are achieving benchmarks, something like the Founis and Pinnell benchmark kit, the Teachers College benchmark kit, or particularly in grades 3 and beyond, they might use an informal reading inventory. That's what IRI stands for, an informal reading inventory, perhaps reading a passage or two, the grade level passage, to simply determine, because it has some questions in retelling, to simply determine, is this child functioning at grade level or not? And then finally, our more traditional achievement tests. I know that some charter schools still do need to use some of these, and they are being used in many charter schools. The Gates-McGinnity, Terra Nova, and some of the more traditional standardized assessments. Next, we'll move on to diagnostic measures. The measures on this page, the screening measures, aside from the mini IRI, the grade level, which has a grade level passage and also has a retelling to be done, often which has idea units that are scored with norms and field tested percentages, and then set comprehension questions. Aside from that mini IRI, it is very difficult to use any of the other measures to really inform instruction, okay? So in that case, you know, you really typically need some diagnostic measures. And so these diagnostic measures are what you're actually going to use to target, to pinpoint instruction. To pinpoint instruction, to hit that bullseye, to hit that sweet spot of where the child is ready to learn, and then learning can occur. And so Diagnostic measures might include a more extended IRI process where you're not just finding whether a child is proficient on grade level or not, but you're actually getting them to read passages using a quantified, normed coding process to identify how they are doing a retelling when texts are easy, difficult, and hard, and then also asking some questions that have been normed. And so you might do that diagnostically. Any of these diagnostic measures are going to take time, all right? Also, you would be using some developmentally specific tools, and many classroom teachers, this doesn't necessarily have to be just for tier two and tier three, but I think in the classroom, you really have some powerful developmental tools, for, especially in, with kids in K1, 2, and 3. You have got to pinpoint along these this linear trajectory, all right, along this linear trajectory in which kids are developing, you have to pinpoint where they are on that developmental trajectory, and it requires a diagnostic developmental tool. For example, in areas of phonological awareness, you need to use something more diagnostic. You need to use, you know, a measure that is identifying what do they have under control, what don't they have under control. It's not enough to just say yes or no. Phonics measures, where are they? Are they in the, you know, and using your phonics measures along with your developmental spelling inventories to identify, does this child have mastery of the short vowel patterns? Are they in the letter name stage where they're still learning how to make and to refine their knowledge of short vowels and to become more and make those approximations more and more precise? Or are they in the within word stage, really needing, yes, maybe they can read those long vowel words, but they really have not consolidated their knowledge of those long vowel patterns. I can look in their writing test and can see that they are have still not mastered those long vowel patterns. And then the high frequency word test. We need to, the high frequency word test, our Dolch, our Fry, we test those words, and then we take those same words and we explicitly teach them. And then also some coded retellings with quantitative information. So I would recommend that, and see, now this is where next week, or I'm sorry, February 24th, we will actually go into some specific tests in each of these areas that you may be using. Today, I'm just telling you, this is what we're referring to in terms of diagnostic. It may also be done in tier one in grades kindergarten, first and second and third and third grade for those, particularly in third grade for some of your low performing kids. Progress monitoring. Progress monitoring is a means of microscopically examining student achievement and then tracing that those individual learning trajectories and evaluating whether what I'm doing instructionally, is it making a difference? Are kids changing over time as a result of this instruction? And we look at, in progress monitoring, we always want to look at both achievement level. Is the child performing on grade level or where we expect them to be in the sixth month of first grade, the seventh month of second grade? Are they at the achievement level that we expect? But also, when I look back over the last 6 weeks, are they making progress every 2 weeks, inching up, inching up, inching up, and continuing to make progress? And so progress monitoring is aligned with a particular intervention need and an instructional target. It's throughout this webinar strand, you will often hear me talking about hitting a target. And so that's why we want a lean and mean and lean and efficient assessment system, so that we can really identify what our instructional target is and then match that intervention with it. We don't want to be playing pin the tail on the donkey and just hoping something sticks. We need to be using assessment to identify where the child's need is, provide an intervention there, and then using this progress monitoring every 2 weeks or every week in special ed and tier three to ensure that our children are making progress. And that's one of the reasons why CBMs do tend to work fairly well as progress monitoring tools, because they are very sensitive. Because of the timed nature of them, they are very sensitive over very short periods of time, over 2 weeks, over a week. And we also, they have been able to provide some data to provide that they are standardized. And when I talk about CBMs as progress monitoring tools, I'm talking about some of those Dibbles measures or AIMSWeb or FastBridge. These are the companies. Dibbles, AIMSWeb, and FastBridge are the companies. And then they provide tests on things like letter recognition fluency that you might be using, oral reading fluency that you might be using. And among others, there are others. But these are typically tools that can be used to gauge children's progress, over 2 weeks. How is the child doing? Is the child made growth in the last 2 weeks? And because they have a fixed time for test administration, 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, depending on what the directions are, then you will be able to see that they are very, very sensitive to growth. And because typically also many of them are general outcomes. They're what we like to call general outcome automaticity. What do we want the kid to be able to do at the end of second grade? Well, we're going to put it here and we're going to see week by week if they are improving on what we have intended for them to be able to do well by the end of the year. And so then we use these constant sensitive measures across the entire school year. Okay, so we're going to move on. So that's an overview for you. That's an overview for you of functions of assessment. The kind of job that we want, as I talked about earlier, we want assessment to serve us. These are the four ways that we want our assessments to serve us. These are the four functions we want them to achieve. Now, what do we want to measure? So I would like you, Molly, are you okay now, Molly? Now I would like you to identify three things that are your important priorities. What are your three top instructional literacy goals for your students? You may please pick three. Your top, do not pick more than three, pick three. Your three top goals. I must say, this is so beautiful, I had to take a photograph of it. So, Molly, we can go to the next slide. Okay. So, my beloved late husband got me started asking groups of teachers that question. Whenever I work with a group of teachers, I ask them that question, as my beloved late husband used to do. And I think you will find that you share, that we all share a lot in common when we think about what we value and what we want our children to be able to do. We want them to develop a love of reading. We want them to want to read and to love reading and to find the same passion for reading that all of us share, and which is a reason why so many of us became teachers, and particularly reading teachers. We also want them to be able to improve the ability. We want to help them comprehend and use text. You know, the ability, it's really all about making sense of text and being able to use text to escape, to learn new things, to complete tasks, to evaluate our politicians, to make a better society. That's the end goal of all reading. And then in order to be able to do that, these are not really mutually exclusive. In order to love reading, our kids need to have automatic word recognition. If the process is tedious and cumbersome and painful, then children will never love reading. And so these three goals that most of us share as our top priorities are the things that we also need to include in assessment. And they are all related. They are all related. We can't have one without the other. So now let's take a look at our form that we will be using to conduct the assessment audit. Now, as you see on mine, I have the kindergarten page here displayed, but as you see, every single page looks exactly the same. And so the way one would do this is you would write the tool here. You're going to identify how you're using it. But right now, we are going to focus on the constructs. You know, we talked a little bit about the function and why we use particular assessments. But what is it that we are actually assessing? And so it's not going to be the same in every single... This will not be the same in every grade level. So we're going to look at some of the constructs. And remember, our conversation today is about the assessment audit and what we are actually measuring here. All right. So I do see a question about, can't readers be expert readers and not have a love of reading? Absolutely they can. And that's why that would show up in one of our columns here where we see construct assessed. And so, for example, the kinds of things that we need to find out whether our children, whether that is an area of strength for them or whether that is an area that requires instructional attention are in these constructs. So, for example, concepts of print, phonological awareness, word recognition, would include both phonics and high-frequency words, spelling development, reading fluency, conceptual vocabulary. That's not high-frequency words. That's conceptual vocabulary. The writing process, motivation and attitudes, Barbara. So we definitely want to assess that because you are so 100% right. We might have some children that are competent readers, but they haven't caught on to the passion that we might share. And so that is certainly something that we might want to address instructionally in terms of maybe we need to do some themed instruction. because in something like themed instruction, it provides greater opportunities for that to light that fire, to light that inspiration about an engaging topic. And it provides the kind of sustained attention and personal research and student agency for doing their own inquiry explorations. So we certainly, you know, want to get an assessment of each. We want to be identifying how we are assessing each of these areas. We are not assessing them all equally in each grade level. Like, it would be unlikely and undesirable for us to be seeing a fourth grade teacher still doing assessments of concepts of print or phonological awareness, unless that's turned in by a special education teacher or a teacher that's a tier three interventionist. And so these are the constructs that we're actually looking at. Are we assessing what we say we value? Okay. But let me back up just a second, and I'm just going to talk briefly. We'll talk more about this next week, but I do want to just point out that you have two additional columns here. One is frequency of administration, and then the other column, the last column, which I believe is so very important, is the training that has been provided in these assessments that folks are using. So each teacher would self-assess whether they received initial training in a task. Maybe the initial training was done when the school bought the assessment kit. Maybe you've bought the Founis and Pinnell benchmark kit. Yes, the assessment was provided when the school bought it 6 years ago. So that would be a check initial training. Are fidelity checks being conducted? Are teachers, for example, like with those fluency rating scales, are teachers meeting in collective groups with anchor CDs or audio tapes of children reading and getting inter-rater reliability so that Mary in room one is sure to be rating her child's fluency on that fluency rating scale the same as John in classroom number two. And then the final thing is periodic boosters. And so we want to make sure that I would hope that schools are providing boosters periodically before each test administration. If we do screening in September, January, and June, then immediately before there probably needs to be a booster. Would be a grade level, an example of a booster would be a grade level team meeting where they just review the instructions and the coding procedures for the benchmark kit, or maybe they review some other tricky dimension related, some detail-oriented dimension of the administrations, like how many seconds, like before we give dibbles, how many seconds do I wait before I tell the child the word? 1 second, 3 seconds, or 5 seconds? These are details that vary by test, and that boosters are needed if we want to have consistent results from classroom to classroom. And so we actually audit whether that's a part of your existing assessment system. And now, who participates in the audit? Okay, so let's say, I think that there were, where is my note to myself? I think we said that about 30 to 40% of you will be doing this individually, all right? And then maybe with, oh, I'm sorry, that's about 30 to 40% of you are doing it individually, and about between five and 10 are doing it as a grade level. So if you are doing it either individually or as a grade level, then what you would want to do, so you would be the classroom teacher typed here in black, all right? And you would also include the interventionist that works with you, either individually or at that grade level, okay? You would also ask the special ed teachers, teachers who are working with English language learners, your speech and language therapist, you would definitely ask those people what tests are you administering to my kids? Because often what happens is the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. And we might have a classroom teacher administering the Dolch words and testing on the Dolch words, and then we have the special ed teacher doing the Fry words. And here they're really working on the same thing, but neither one knows that the other one is doing it. The poor child is the one who suffers because they're one who's getting the test both places. I actually spoke to someone last week. I don't make these stories up. I spoke to someone last week who said that she gives the Ames Web she gives the DRA because she likes that they have set questions, which go with each story and more deliberate coding of the retelling. Her special ed partner teacher is given the Faunus and Pinnell test. So here we have a duplication of the same test. It's basically these tests are encountering the same construct and are designed to test the same thing. And the poor child is being pulled and being tested multiple times on the same skill, when really the desired thing is make a decision, which one do you want to use, the Faunus and Pinnell benchmark or the DRA test, because we don't want children to be over-tested. And so there has to be communication and consensus. Now, when we talk about a school-wide audit and who would be participating in the school-wide audit, we have the school principal or assistant principal. Some head administrator has to lead this charge, has to spearhead it. So we have the school principal, because we do know that school principals are the gatekeeper. They're in charge of the budget. And so we really need to make sure that they are the ones that are spearheading this. And certainly there are people who may have more literacy expertise, many classroom teachers, many literacy interventionists. But because of the use of resources and the need to the part of the process is, okay, we are going to democratically make a decision at the end of this process in terms of what we value and what assessments we all want to buy into. Well, when it comes to enforcing that, the school principal has to be the key player. The school principal is the one who also is who spearheads the professional development that the school will undertake. So we cannot have a school-wide audit that doesn't include the school principal or assistant principal. We also would, in this kind of meeting, we would also have a grade-level classroom teacher representing their grade-level audit and presenting their grade-level audit. We would have a single literacy specialist representative. We would have a single teacher education teacher representative. We would have an English language learner teacher representative, a speech language therapist representative, a school psychologist. We would hope could attend all the meetings. If you don't have one that is in your building all the time, then I would hope that your school psychologist would participate in most of these meetings, as well as if you have a data coach in your district, I would hope that that data coach would also be an active participant, at least in a portion of the meetings. And then let me back up one second. Now, we talked about up back here that at the grade level team, every teacher is filling out one of these forms. And then you're getting together and you are consolidating one form from the grade level. But each person is filling out a form individually, what they use. And then you get together at a 45-minute grade level meeting and you put that information on one form. All right. That one form, your grade level representative takes that single form to the school-wide audit meeting and then presents what's happening in that particular grade level. So the school would accumulate all their data. Hopefully there's someone that's really good with technology. They would have discussions and would then come up with a school-wide audit. At that stage, if you are doing this district-wide, at this stage of the process, you haven't really changed anything at all. You're simply reporting what our school uses if you're doing it at the district level. All right. So you simply are reporting now to the district for the district meeting. Here is what our school uses and why and how we use it. And then at the district-wide meeting, you would have some kind of, typically when I participated in this process with districts who decided to undergo an audit, the person who led it. In one case was the district-wide literacy person, and in another place it was the district-wide curriculum director who was in charge of all curriculum at the district level. And those were the two key people who really spearheaded this. The school at the district level, the school psychologist in both districts was a huge, huge player, attended every meeting. We have classroom teacher representatives from each school and a so every school is represented and every grade level is represented in some way. So we don't have a grade level represented from each school, but you do have, you know, every school is represented and each grade level is represented by one or two people. We might have one or two literacy specialists attend a district-wide meeting, one or two special ed teacher representatives, an English language learner teacher representative, a speech language therapist representative and working on this team, and a data coach. And this team, this audit team, would be the group that actually engages in the conversation and the process, the audit process of using multiple meetings to cull through all this information, which is what we'll talk about on webinar number 3. Now, the principals don't necessarily need to attend this meeting at this level, but the district itself would hold intermittent meetings with principals to update them on the process. So this concludes your overview at this, you know, for this stage of just kind of looking at the form, figuring out who are going to be the participants, what is the level at which we are going to engage in the audit process, and knowing what all that terminology on the form actually means. In our next audit on February 24th, we will actually walk through this form using detailed information about tests within each construct that are likely to be used in primary grades. I will actually go through, I will select 3 different assessments and we will walk through this process together. I will show you how to actually do the website, do the form with this process. We will also talk more about the important ways that specialized school personnel can be included in this process and how they need to be included in this process. And then we will begin talking about synthesizing. We will just begin our conversation about synthesizing separate data sources to create a big picture. And so that's where we're headed on February 24th. Our third webinar will talk about, okay, once you get all the data, what do you do with it? How do you decide what's of value? How do you weed? How do you prune? And how do you fill those voids? That will be meeting number 3. So now we're at this part where we open it up for your questions that you might have had about today's presentation. We don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, but in terms of the information that I presented today, you can simply type in a question. For example, I see Barbara's question here about a booster. I will address that, while some of you may want to add some of your additional questions about today's content. So Barbara asked the question, is a booster a review to maintain the standardized protocol for administering assessments? That's exactly right, Barbara. So booster sessions are given immediately before, as I said. So for example, let's say we're getting ready in September to begin doing our screening assessments. So we would, depending on how much of a boost is needed, you might only need in K1, 2, and 3, you may only need to double check things like you may want to, in terms of your booster session, you may want to re-listen to those tapes of the children that were, tapes of children reading. And so let's say you're doing the Founis and Pinnell benchmark kit. I would say the kinds of very detailed standardized information that you want to confirm for a test like that in a booster session is you would want to say, okay, how many seconds do we wait? If a child is stuck on a word, do we wait 1 second, 3 seconds, or 5 seconds? What does the Founis and Pinnell handbook of administration tell us how long we're supposed to wait? Okay, because, you know, I forgot that from last June when I gave the test. Which one is it? Because we also give dibbles, and I know that that's 3 seconds. Is this one 5 seconds? Is this one 1 second? Because so many of these tests that we give have different time frames like that. So we really need to make sure that we're saying, okay, on this test, I'll wait 1 second. This test, I wait 3 seconds. On this test, I count this as an error. On this test, I don't count it as an error. And so those kinds of detailed nuances require booster sessions in the week previous to when the test is administered. Another kind of thing that probably requires, confirmation that we're all administering it in the standardized way. Another example would be in that Founis and Pinnell benchmark test or in the Teachers College benchmark test, that if we're asking kids to do a retelling, are we all rating the retelling using a standard protocol? Or is what my kid, when I hear this retelling, am I saying that that is adequate and she's calling that not adequate? So how are we ensuring that assessments are being administered in a standardized way at my school, and boosters can help ensure that? Now, I'm seeing a question here. What is the average time frame for the various assessments? Well, Damaris, each assessment that you administer would prescribe time frames. I can't answer that question because that is indicated by the assessments that you are administering and by the assessments that your school and your district have chosen. I can't really give a time frame. Other questions? Anyone like to type another question? You've been a great audience, and I hope to see, I think Molly is typing something, but I really look forward to seeing this wonderful group again on February 24th when we talk about the details.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stahl. It's been a pleasure to have you back, and we look forward to February 24th. I am posting a link to the evaluation. If folks could take a few minutes to complete that, we appreciate that. And Dr. Stahl, if you would just hang out for a minute, I appreciate that.
Oh, surely. I will certainly hang on here until 5:15. Oh, thank you for this wonderful feedback. It helps me to know that you all are out there. And also, please feel free, you have my email contact, please feel free to contact me during the intermittent 2 weeks or whenever you have additional questions that you might be thinking of, you know, after the webinar is over. I'm more than happy to answer your questions on email as well.